Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, let's get into today's 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And Ross, you may fire when ready.
All right, so we kind of hit on this at the bottom of last hour, but we saw, you know, Kentucky really demolish Tennessee, and Tennessee was number one in the country. Do you think Tennessee can hang in with these blue bloods through the, you know, more important games in March? I mean, Kentucky, Duke, Gonzaga, Virginia, UNC, Michigan State. You think they're on that kind of level, or do you think, you know, they might be in for an earlier tournament exit because, you know, they're not a traditional powerhouse?
I've been a buyer in Tennessee for most of the season, and I think they are legitimately Final Four good. But to your point, the counter to that is they have two losses. They lost to Kansas and they lost to Kentucky, those Royal Blue Blood programs. They did beat Gonzaga, who I wouldn't consider one of the, you know, college basketball royalty. They're a more recent power. But yeah, they lost to, they've been beaten by Kansas on a neutral, and they lose it at Kentucky. You know, but part of why, like, you kind of felt like Saturday was building to Kentucky beating them in Rupp. It didn't help Tennessee that Kentucky had lost that game the way it did to LSU earlier in the week. And, yeah, as Tennessee had gotten rolling, I mean, you look at their resume, and it's – I'll give you, it isn't the strongest. They beat Georgia, Missouri, Florida, Arkansas, Bama, Vandy, West Virginia, who are not having a good year.
West Virginia, this is as bad as they've been probably in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I mean,
South Carolina, Texas A&M, Missouri, Florida again, and South Carolina. So as strong as the SEC has been this year, Tennessee still has not played, as of Saturday, they had not played Kentucky. They had not played LSU. They had not played Auburn yet. So they've still got all those games ahead of them. They play LSU this Saturday. They have to play Kentucky again, though that game will be in Knoxville, and then they close at Auburn to close the season. So they, I mean, what are you looking at? They had played Georgia, who are in the midst of just a horrendous run. They've lost 10 straight SEC games now. Missouri's bad. Florida's not having a good year. They're on the bubble. Arkansas's bad. Bama's not great. Vandy's terrible. West Virginia's terrible. South Carolina's weird. Their overall record's no good. But you know, they're 8-4 in the SEC. And, you know, and then Texas A&M, we're not having a good year. So in the top-heavy SEC until Saturday, Tennessee had not faced any of those teams. And the first one they do does end up beating them pretty badly. But all that said, though, I still think Tennessee's good because they're a veteran team with Schofield, with Williams. You know, they're going to run into some teams, even as, like, hyper-talented as somebody like Duke is. I mean, that's still a Duke team that's heavily reliant on a lot of freshmen.
Yeah,
and
you do those freshmen are really good.
I mean, yeah, those freshmen that are going to be, what, like, the picks 1, 2, and 3 in the draft?
Yeah.
But no, I'm not selling Tennessee for dumping that game to Kentucky. It kind of, to me, you could kind of smell it coming.
Yeah. I wouldn't have minded as much if it was, you know, 5-point, 10-point loss, but they got demolished from the start and never really contended at all, kind of almost like 5-10 minutes in.
Yeah.
They were getting blown out, and I didn't – that was kind of hard for me to buy into it.
I will give them somewhat of a pass when they lost to Kansas earlier in the year. That game went to overtime. Now, Tennessee led pretty much the whole way, and they got caught at the end and went to OT. But then also Grant Williams fouled out of that game. So they played overtime without him. And Kansas was able to pull ahead and beat them. But, you know, but still, it's a loss is a loss. And they got taken out by Kansas, and they've lost to Kentucky for their two losses. So, yeah, I mean, I can get where someone would look at Tennessee and say, all right, they're having a great year, but that's not really a traditional power, and the two traditional powers they have faced this year both beat them. So I could see where you wouldn't be as you know, into trusting them come March. But as of right now, I'm sitting here, and we don't know where guys are going to be seated and potential tournament matchups. But I'm still liking Tennessee as a threat to make the Final Four. Now, they might have had a run in them last year, but they got beaten. They ran into the Cinderella, Loyola Chicago. They lost by 1 point to them in the second round.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you go either way with it. And I mean, they still only have 2 losses this season. I mean, that's really impressive, make it this far in their non-conference. I know West Virginia, they try to schedule a good team in that too. So, I mean, yeah, their losses, their resume isn't great, but, you know, it's not their fault really. Florida stinks this year. West Virginia stinks. And then they played it close with Kansas. I mean, usually, you know, West Virginia and Florida, those would be two, I don't know, I guess quadrant one wins would be what you'd call them in the bracket talk.
Yeah, they don't – I mean, I guess Florida probably – I mean, Florida's still quality. They've beaten them twice. I mean, the Gators are, like I said, they're on that tournament bubble. I think the last – one of the last – the projection I looked at today actually had them as the first four out.
Yeah.
So they're on the brink. I mean, they could go either way at this point. But as a margin of victory guy, I mean, to – on Tennessee's behalf, you know, you could pick apart their strength of schedule as they ascended to that number one ranking, but – none of the games were close other than that one against Vandy that they won by 5 in overtime. I guess Bama was a close game, but for the most part, they had been drilling everybody. They beat South Carolina by 12 and by 22, beat Florida by 12, Missouri by 12, Texas A&M by 17, West Virginia they blew out by 17. They beat Arkansas by 19. Beat Florida by 11, beat Missouri by 14, and they beat us by 46. So you had two close games in there, Bama and Vandy.
Yeah, and Bama, to me, having Avery Johnson as your coach, I feel like, you know, a close game against them isn't bad at all.
Yeah, I mean, Bama's not by no means terrible.
They're probably middle of the pack SEC.
Yeah, they're 6-6 overall, and they're probably, you know, depending how things go over their last six games, they're on the bubble. They got a couple of chances with they got home games against LSU and Auburn. I think if Bama was able to win those and then not dump a game to, you know, somebody like Vandy at home, then I think Alabama might end up having a bit of a case come tournament time because they do have a win over Kentucky.
Yep. All right, next up, we'll go a little bit more college basketball talk. This time we're going to be talking about the Dogs. No, they've had a rough SEC stretch, not getting a win since that Vanderbilt game in January 9th was their last SEC win. I know they beat Texas at home. But they played pretty competitive with LSU, who just actually knocked off Kentucky the game before that. I know a loss is a loss, but they only lost by 4. Were you encouraged at all by Saturday's loss at all? You still think it's just
honestly, no. When you see stuff like Saturday, just it is more head-scratching.
Yeah,
like I did not expect Georgia to be this bad this season. To lose 10 straight SEC games, and I know we've talked about where Georgia's weak and the lack of really a true point guard just backcourt play in general. But between a trio of like Hammonds, Claxton, and Ogbede, I mean there should be, I mean there a couple other SEC wins to be sitting there at 1-11. Is baffling. So no, I don't.
And Vanderbilt somehow is significantly worse than Georgia.
Yeah, man, is Vandy still? Are they still winless or in the league? Or yeah. They're 0-12. They hadn't won a game yet. So, but to be 1-11, I was not thinking that Georgia would be this bad. And so to me, when you look at a night like Saturday where the Dogs do hang tough with an LSU team that is. I mean, they're at second place of the conference now because they've only got they're 11-1, right? So they're tied for first in the SEC now with Tennessee.
And I think like 20-4 or something, and
21-4 and 11-1 now.
Yeah,
they
lost Georgia. To Houston and on the road. Houston's good. They're like number 10, and then did another I think ranked non-conference loss.
Well, they lost to Florida State and Oklahoma State.
Oh, yeah.
And they've only lost one time since, basically now, well, twice since Thanksgiving, because that was at a Thanksgiving tournament. The Houston loss, okay. And then they got Arkansas beat them by 1 in Baton Rouge.
That's odd, yeah.
But for me, when Georgia plays like it did Saturday and they're going toe-to-toe with a team that's having a year like LSU, we do have to admit, though, LSU coming off that win at Rupp Arena, it was a good spot for Georgia Saturday. But even with LSU rolling in a sleepy situation, the game ended up tightening there at the end. But over the last like 5 or 6 minutes of that game, I mean, LSU was pretty much in control of it.
Yeah.
But still, in the end, Georgia loses by 4. But you know, for me, it only makes it more puzzling
that they can hang in there with LSU and not really compete against the lower quarter teams in the league.
Yeah, but be 1-11 now and have lost 10 straight games.
Yeah.
And I'll just be honest. I mean, most of them haven't even been close. They got blown out by A&M on Tuesday, and A&M's terrible.
Yeah, they're really bad.
Ole Miss a week ago.
Ole Miss isn't bad at all.
No,
they're probably a bubble team.
But that was one where it's like, really, you know, you thought like with Ole Miss, they're not bad, but coming to Athens, that was one where you think like, well, that might be at least a tight game where Georgia could hang. And I mean, Ole Miss just blew us out.
Yeah, you're right.
Hey, but Anthony Edwards is coming.
He is.
Hopefully. I mean, he hadn't signed yet. He did commit, though.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
All right, next up, I guess it came out today that the Patriots this summer were looking at trading for Odell Beckham Jr. How do you think that would have turned out if he would have ended up in New England this fall? You think they still would have won the Super Bowl? You think Odell would have fit in well there, or do you think it would have been kind of a disaster?
For whatever reason, guys go to New England and they fit in, even if they've had problems where they've been in the past. Corey Dillon did it. I mean, Randy Moss had just a disaster couple of years in Oakland. Ends up going to New England and is fine. And I guess Josh Gordon is one who – but, he's got substance abuse problems, and hopefully he can at some point in his life get that taken care of. But while he was in New England, he was really good.
And I think he was a good teammate. I think, you know, Brady enjoyed him being on the team. You know, he spoke well about him in press conferences and everything.
I think
he fit in fine. It was just, you know, the drugs were the problem.
Yeah. No, what I like is that as soon as now New England wants, they're sniffing around like Odell Beckham. Now that suddenly the Giants are like, no, we definitely need to keep this guy here. But here's how it would have been if Odell Beckham had been in New England. The Patriots probably would have won the Super Bowl just like they just did.
Yeah.
As long as Belichick and Brady are still there and they've got the 6 layups by virtue of playing in the AFC East, the Patriots – it's going to be hard-pressed to pick anyone else to come out of the AFC.
Yeah, because, it really depends. You know, in a couple of years, it might work out well where, you know, you got Darnold, you know, blooming in New York, and then Josh Allen. I mean, he was better than I think most of us expected this season in Buffalo. So if one of those guys turns out to be, you know, Pro Bowl quarterback or whatever.
Wait till the Dolphins draft Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Although Mel Kiper and his mock draft 2.0, which was out there today, he's got the Dolphins taking Kyler Murray.
Hmm. Would you like that?
I have to admit, I'm kind of piqued by that.
Yeah, well, last year I remember talking to you, like this time last year, and you were all about Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, when, you know, most of the gurus like the Darnolds and Allens and Rosens and everything.
Right. You know, it's like it's something with the knock on, well, his height is height is height. But you've got Russell Wilson and Drew Brees have done pretty well in the NFL. Doug Flutie was good, too, when he left Canada and had a couple good years with Buffalo. You know, maybe the thing about short quarterbacks is they've been typecast and no one even gives them a chance, because I can probably name I can list off a bunch of really tall quarterbacks who have sucked.
Yeah. Well, the tall ones like Ryan Mallett, Brock Osweiler, Paxton Lynch, I mean, all those guys are like 6'8", 6'7".
Yeah.
They've been horrible.
Yeah, like there have been plenty of tall quarterbacks that aren't any good, but they keep getting chances. And meanwhile, these short quarterbacks, their opportunities are limited, but it seems like the ones that do get opportunities are pretty good. Yeah. Is it, like getting that even Mayfield's not even that tall, is he?
No, he's like, I don't think he's much bigger than me, really. He's listed, I think, around 6'1", but I'd bet he's six flat,
yeah.
Six, you know.
And I'm sure, like, Murray's probably shorter than they say he is, and he doesn't weigh a lot either, but Russell Wilson, Breeze, it's just the, you know, these teams have decided that they don't want to risk it with these short quarterbacks, so they don't get as many opportunities as tall ones, but there's plenty of tall ones that stink.
Yeah, and I saw a stat tweeted out the other day. I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was 4 or 5 passes Murray had that were deflected this season, which were the least of all the guys kind of projected to go in that first round compared to guys like Drew Lock, Haskins. You know, he had the lowest amount of guys, I guess, projected to go on day 1 of the NFL draft than any other quarterback, and he's by far the shortest one. So I think guys like that have been playing their whole life, you know, he's been short forever. Yeah. I'm sure he was one of the shortest kids in 6th grade playing quarterback. So
right.
He's learned how to deal with it.
I'd be fine with that. Take him. Let him play the next 2 seasons. If it works, great. If not, then draft Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, not a bad plan.
He can go play for the, A's, or he can go into baseball like Tebow did. I mean, Tebow's going to be in AAA.
He'll probably make the majors this year. I think so.
He might.
Yeah.
What if he came to Braves Stadium?
Yeah.
Playing for the Mets.
It'd be crazy. Be wild.
I bet that game would like sell out.
Yeah, probably. Next up today, it got announced that they're going to allow shorts on the PGA Tour practice rounds and pro-ams. What do you think of that?
For some reason, I don't like it. I don't like the look of shorts on male golfers. I mean, the LPGA golfers can wear them, and they wear skirts too, but the men have always worn pants, and I just think that's like a clean, more proper look. But I don't play golf when you're playing in the summer somewhere at a U.S. Open or the PGA Championship. But they're not talking about the rounds. They're just talking about like the pro-ams. Maybe they could get away with it there, sure. Yeah. But I think during the actual play of golf, I don't know. I think like the pros should wear pants.
Yeah. And that's what it still will be, I guess, is, you know, the tournaments, you're going to be wearing pants.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Some of those guys, though, I mean, they probably wouldn't – they'd be wise not to wear shorts.
Yeah.
Like the way their legs might look.
Probably. Your calves might get pretty big, though, after, walking.
You could.
18 holes pretty much every day of your life.
The caddies are the ones with, like, the 50-pound bag on those, so they get
true.
Workout.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they get tipped 1/3 of 1% by guys who went to Tech.
Maybe at Tech, you know, I know they're the academic school and all. Maybe they're math, you know, they're engineering, but maybe they don't do the percentage stuff that well. Maybe that's the problem.
Maybe that's it. He didn't figure out the math. Yeah. His percentage was like, hey, this poor guy makes $200 a day caddy, and I gave him $5,000 for the week. And that was $1,000 more than I agreed to. I guess shorts for practice rounds are all right. You don't see that on TV anyway, do you?
Usually not, no. I mean, you might see a highlight on ESPN of a chip in. I don't know what.
I'll bet Augusta National won't let that happen, though, for their practice rounds.
Yeah, probably
pants
not.
Only.
Yeah.
But it's not. Sure it's usually not blazing hot around here then anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I know how hot I've been going to some golf tournaments, though. And, I mean, I definitely wouldn't want to be wearing pants.
No, I could definitely see some of those. You know, the U.S. Open or the PGA Championship could definitely be in some hot place. And if you want to throw some shorts on for a practice round, I don't think it's hurting anything.
No, you're right. All right, last question to the NBA All-Star Weekend. And, you know, you always got the dunk contest, three-point contest. So would you rather be able to have the ability? I don't know. Can you dunk?
No.
I don't know. You're kind of tall. I don't know your
ability. I can touch the rim.
Okay.
Yeah. Or at least I used to be able to. I haven't tried. I mean, I'm older now. When I was younger, I could at least get up there. And
I mean, that's respectable.
Like, I could get up there and I could grab the rim
and,
like, hang on it. But I couldn't get so high to where I could actually stuff a ball in there, though.
Yeah.
I was, like, close, but not quite.
Okay. Well, would you rather have the ability to dunk, you know, pretty well? Not like windmills and stuff. You know, you could throw it down with one hand, or, you know, be like Curry from three-point land and just be able to make, I don't know.
I think I'd want a dunk.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. Just to be able to flush one on somebody, even if it was just like where you go up and you stuff it with two hands and like pull the rim down. Yeah, I think I'd rather have that ability than just sharpshoot from anywhere on the court.
Yeah, it's always been fun, you know. We'd, like, lower the goal when I was little to, like, 8 feet and just It's a good feeling.
Yeah, like we'd go and find an elementary school with an 8-foot goal, then we could go and do dunks there and stuff. But the problem was is that I remember that rim. It's not like it was one of those breakaway rims, so you'd end up just like tearing your wrist apart.
Oh, I've broken a backboard before dunking on a.
Oh, you've done it. I'm talking about like a wrist.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
Yeah, I mean, you just go up there and you dunk, and then
it hurts.
Your wrist is
because
that rim's not going anywhere. Yeah, I'm
trying
8-foot
playing on a kid's goal when you're 16, 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun though.
I know. Yeah. You got to replace that backboard then.
Yeah.
What happened with? Because I didn't see it. Did John Collins have a bad dunk?
So he brought up like this prop plane that was like, I don't know, probably went up to like your knees or waist, something around that. And he like jumped over the plane, and on his way up, he like clipped the wing, and the wing fell off. And he made the dunk, but you know it kind of ruined the purpose of it because he's supposed to jump over a plane, but he broke the plane on the way up.
Mm-hmm. I know the guy that won the dunk held that pose like that sketch on the Chappelle Show with Prince, when Chappelle was Prince, and Prince was dunking, and then he hung on the rim by his.
Yeah, he jumped over Shaq and then elbowed it.
And then hung there on his elbow.
Yeah.
Which is like, I'm assuming that was a salute to the Chappelle Show and Prince.
See, I've wanted to try that on those small goals, and I just never had the guts to do it. Because I feel like that would hurt.
Jump over someone?
No, the elbow. I mean, shoving your elbow in the rim and then hanging on it.
That could go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it would go wrong for me.
All right, that is today's 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.